From Cambridge 105, this is Election Studio.
Welcome back to the Election Studio. I'm Julian Clover. For our final interview, we turn to Stephen Goldspink. He's the English Democrats mayoral candidate. He joined the party after 10 years as a councillor with the Conservatives. Mr. Goldspink entered local politics in 2000 and has since stood for elections, including a position on Cambridgeshire County Council, Fenland District Council, and in 2012 for the county's Police and Crime Commissioner. Stephen, welcome to Cambridge 105 and the Election Studio. I'm thinking there's going to be a lot of listeners who are not actually sure what the English Democrats stand for. So I guess we should start by giving you the opportunity to tell everyone in your own words.
OK, well, I'll just focus on our key point. We've got a manifesto that covers absolutely everything, including some very interesting green policies, including hydrogen fuel cells. But rather than to dive into that, I suppose our main claim to fame is that we believe that England should have a parliament the same as Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland to stand up for the country of England. At the moment, we don't think England gets a fair deal because it hasn't got that representation.
The problem of, what's the question in the Commons,
now,
isn't it?
Now, I'm not going to remember either, Julian.
These things sometimes get thrown at you.
There's two things. There's the fact that Scottish MPs get to vote on legislation that affects England, and there's also a settlement which for many years has given Scotland a more favourable settlement, both of which, of course, would probably never have happened if England had its own parliament.
And where do you stand on the political spectrum then? I guess a lot of people would put you over on the UKIP side of things, but is that fair? Because you've already referred to environmental policies, for example.
Well, yes, I suppose it is fair. I mean, I don't think personally I've ever changed my stance politically. I think the parties have moved rather than me.
Because you were a Conservative councillor at one point, weren't you?
Exactly. And therefore, I think the Conservative went rather more left-wing in a Blair direction, and I stayed where I was and found a new home in the English Democrats.
So as the parties were, if you like, going towards the centre ground, as I think most people acknowledged happened at least during the early Blair years, may not necessarily later on with the Conservative Party, although I guess all parties go backwards and forwards over a period of time.
Well, they redefined themselves because they were obviously in a period when they were locked out of office for many years. And during that period, at some point, I decided I wasn't comfortable there and looked for a new home and found it with the English Democrats.
How about now? Because you've seen, certainly on the UKIP side, not necessarily the English Democrats, you've seen a few. Nick Clark, of course, a local guy who's well known for being both in Conservatives and UKIP, has decided it's time to give the Conservatives a chance again. You didn't think to yourself, well, you know, this battle's been won, we maybe need to realign a little bit, I should get back in the Conservatives at some point?
Well, one battle's been won that we were with UKIP on, and that was a vote to leave the European Union. But the other battle has not been won, and that's to vote to get England its own parliament. So having made the jump out of the Conservatives, I'm now committed to try and get the English Democrats in 5-10 years to where UKIP were a couple of years ago, and to get this question sorted as well.
What sort of representation do you have? I'm thinking there are some other mayoral contests going on at the moment, and of course it's a matter of the general election, of course, but within the mayoral contest, how many other English Democrats are vying for a mayor's seat?
There's only one that I'm aware of, and that's Manchester.
So up against Andy Burnham?
Yes. So we pick and choose what we do. It depends on who we've got who's interested, because obviously we haven't got a massive membership. And coming to the general election, I'm not sure how many candidates we're going to field. We normally try to field as many as we can to get a party election broadcast.
Would you run yourself?
No, I don't think so, for two reasons. Number one, until the mayor job came up, I'd slipped quietly into retirement, but I rather like the look of the interest of the mayor job. And number two, I'm likely to be on holiday when the nomination papers go in, so there's going to be a practical reason why I can't.
I think there's probably lots of people who are probably planning to be on holiday maybe have to precisely reshuffle their plans around a little bit. Of course, you did stand early on for the Police and Crime Commissioner first time around, I think, when Jason Abelwhite You did stand for the Police and Crime Commissioner early on when Graham Bright, of course, was in post or was elected at that first election.
Yes, I did. And it was the same as the Cambridgeshire mayor, really. It was a new post. There was a lot of interest around it. I was interested in getting involved, so I had a go. Second time around, my interest had waned a little.
Mm. I think of all the candidates who I've spoken to, you're the most difficult one to track down, really. Normally, with these things, if you don't necessarily have direct contact with the person or the party, the easiest thing to do is to throw somebody's name into a search engine and hopefully you get some information back. But I found it very difficult. Do you have a website for your campaign?
No, I don't. I mean, all I've got is stuff that gets thrown up about my previous career as a councillor.
So no Facebook account of Stephen for Mayor or anything like that?
No, it's very low key.
Twitter?
And, no, I've never tweeted in my life. I've Facebooked, but I haven't Twittered. So that's a little unusual, I guess, in today's day and age. But we have got a page in the mayoral booklet, which is going to go to every home. And I've taken part in as many debates as I can.
I received mine this afternoon. You'll be pleased to hear. But it must be tricky, though, because if people want to know information about somebody, they'll find articles about you, as you mentioned, from your previous career as a councillor, and obviously some more recent ones as the mayoral campaign has got underway. And there does, I've found in previous elections, there does almost, it's not quite a left-right split in terms of who uses social media, though one does sometimes think that you do see a lot of activity, say, from the Greens or from the Lib Dems and from Labour. Not a sweeping statement, I know, but certainly not so much from the Conservatives, sometimes from UKIP. I don't know, you feel like it's relatively easy to get into social media, either by doing it yourself or hiring one of the many agencies to do so. It's you're cutting off a modern broadcast medium.
Well, you have to remember that before Twitter and Facebook, there was paper, leaflets, etc., and people got by then.
There's still very much paper around.
Yes. I'm not deliberately cutting off, but I was a fairly late comer to this particular party, and so getting set up was not quite so easy for me. So, no, I haven't done that. Maybe if I stood in a future election, I'd look at that a bit more. But people have contacted party headquarters, and I've had quite a bit of interest through there. So they do find ways to get in touch with you.
And indeed, that's the method that I used. I'm very, very pleased to have been able to find you through that route. Do you think we need an outsider, maybe like yourself, to shake things up in the local government level with responsibility, as you could have for the district councils and indeed the county council across Cambridgeshire?
Well, I've coined a little phrase during this election, which I trotted out on two or three debates, including the one on the television the other night, and that is, if the Conservatives, the Labour Party and the Liberal Democrats have been in power for the last 40 years in Cambridgeshire and nothing has changed and they're not integrating during that time, why would putting another one over the top of them make any difference? So the answer to your question is yes, I think we need someone different, be it Peter Dore, the Independent, or be it me, or you know, anyone else who's got a background not from the traditional parties, because I'm not convinced that one of the traditional parties taking the reins is going to make the difference that this mayorship needs to make.
Maybe that's just a sort of parallels almost with the Police and Crime Commissioner, which instantly became a political appointment, just simply by virtue of those people who stood. And I wonder, you know, it makes you wonder, Peter Dore, you mentioned the Independent candidate, successful businessman, as other candidates, of course, Rod Cantrell, I think yourself as well, pretty decent businessman in everyday life, as it were. But why isn't there some, I don't know, chief executive, a guy who wants one final challenge, just coming out of the world of business and putting himself forward, or herself for that matter, forward to become mayor?
Well, I'm going to have to say at this point, Donald Trump. I mean, you look at Donald Trump, he wasn't from a political background, he came from a business background, but he had no reason to stand other than he felt that he wanted to effect a change, you know. And it is difficult to work against the major political parties in this country. Even getting a nomination form signed, you have to get 100 signatures, 10 from each of the local authorities. I don't know anybody in several of these areas. However, people were quite good when I said, look, will you help me get my name on the ballot paper? And they helped me. So it would be good if we could get more independent people into these positions, but unfortunately the party political system in this country makes it difficult.
And you bring up Donald Trump as a good example of how things should be done, or as a bad example?
I would say an interesting example. I mean, nobody expected him to succeed at the outset, but I did see someone pose the question, why has he done this? He had no need to do it at all. And he did it because he felt that America was not going in the right direction. He felt he had something to offer. Whether he does or not, we shall find out over the course of the next 4 years. But he's made some promises and he's trying to keep them. And that in itself is a little different from what happens over here.
Yes, and I'm probably thankful that we're not covering any American elections here as well as those that we're already taking a look at. We mentioned, of course, Europe, the Brexit question and the vote of the country as a whole to pull out of the European Union. Cambridge, of course, famously was the, I guess, arguably the second most Europhile place wanting to stay. Of course, the most one was Gibraltar, which is not even within the British Isles. And look what's been happening there. But I wonder how that sits both within your own policies and arguably elsewhere within the county, out in the Fens, for example, who were very much the people, or amongst the people, who wanted to leave the European Union. How do you convince somebody within Cambridge that, well, you know, vote English Democrat because that battle's lost, but I can help you on this instead?
Well, I don't stand so much on the party political spectrum in this particular post. Obviously, I identify with the English Democrats. But my main reason for standing is to get things changed and to get things done.
In which case, why didn't you stand as an independent rather than with the English Democrats?
Because I have an affiliation with England having its own parliament. So there's an opportunity to do two things at once. Maybe I will put some people off with that particular badge. I don't know. But it's the way I've chosen to do it. So my record in East Ward in Peterborough was one of community service, of delivering things, and I can still walk round that ward and say, I got that done, I got that done, I got that done. And after 4 years, or even quicker than that, I would hope I could do so with the mayorship as well.
And how do you unite Cambridge with the rest of the area? Because we're pretty much out on a limb already politically, regardless of what happens on May the 4th. We have a Labour-controlled city council where you look at the district councils, the county council, pretty much Conservative-led.
Well, we do have a pretty good tradition in this country of coming together behind an electoral result that some people do not agree with. So if you go back to when Margaret Thatcher was elected, the country came behind her eventually. There was still opposition, obviously. When Tony Blair came in, he swept in with a red swathe. And again, there were people who weren't happy with that. But the country tends to say, OK, we're not happy with it, but we accept that's what happens in a democracy and we'll go with it. So my view would be to show the people of Cambridge and Peterborough that I'm going to deal with them all fairly and I'm going to make the best that we can of the Brexit decision.
Now, almost exclusively, the mayoral candidates who we've spoken to in the election studio have talked about electric buses, integrated transport policies. But do you feel the car is maybe getting a tough time of it in all of this?
You must have been reading some of my literature, I think. I am somebody who is not an enemy of the car at all. After all, we're a largely rural county. And one of the costs that I counted when I moved out from the city of Peterborough to the village of Turves was how much it was going to cost me to get in and out to do my shopping and all the other things that I needed to do. And so I wasn't thinking about buses because there aren't any. I wasn't thinking about trains because there aren't any. But those modes of transport do have a role. So if you look at Cambridge, you are fairly reliant on buses and cycles. If you look at Peterborough, it's got a network of roads that were built through the Development Corporation. So it's horses for courses, really, different modes for different areas. But I'm certainly not an enemy of the car, and I'm appalled at what the government have done in relation to diesel cars. I'm not going to vilify car drivers, but I'm going to try and make things easier for everybody.
So let's pick up a couple of those points then. First of all, the bus routes. You mentioned your village, like so many places around rural Cambridgeshire, has trouble in getting a bus service together. Would you use your powers as mayor to put a bus in, or buses in?
Well, without being without favouring them particularly, yes, I would. But there's ways you can do this, you see, because if you look at the bus that goes from Whittlesea to March. It drives along a long A road with hardly any houses on. Instead of diverting off through the village of Turves, the distance isn't any greater, but it could actually serve a number of people. So I think there'll be listeners who can think of a number of other examples where rerouting a bus could actually make quite a bit of difference.
So somebody needs to sit down and rework the timetables, the routes, in order to bring in areas that, you know, they may have a bus. I don't know. They may have a bus, say, once every 3 hours. That might be a bit optimistic in some places. But you might, with a bit of reworking, be able to, I don't know, get a service every 90 minutes, say.
Yes, and the mayor's going to have some rights over bus franchising as well. And we'll be trying to use those, whoever is mayor, will be trying to use those particular powers to improve the lot of rural bus services, because not everybody has a car. I accept that. Then if you look at trains, you know, Whittlesea Station, and I'm sorry for the listeners in Cambridge who are failing to identify with my Peterborough-centric view, but you can put your own example in here. Whittlesea Station, you can get out to Peterborough in the morning and avoid the traffic on the A605, but coming home at night, there's no train between 10 to 6 and 10 to 8. So if you leave work at 5:30 and you get to the station at 5:55, you have to wait 2 hours for a train back. But there are a number that whiz straight through the station. So there's all sorts of these little things. There's roads where an extra lane could actually improve things. There's cycleways where a bit of new road surfacing would help. I think there are hundreds of little improvements on all modes of transport across the county that we could put in pretty quickly and make a big difference.
What do you think of the Clean Air Zone, which is being proposed for Cambridge? It seems to be attached to, I'm assured by the Labour candidate, that it isn't a congestion charge, but it seems to be a charge that one might pay. We don't know how much it might be yet, but potentially a charge one might pay if you drive a diesel vehicle into Cambridge at some point in the future. Is that something you'd let them do, or would you make a few phone calls?
Would that be the same party that 12 years ago was encouraging us to drive diesels because the petrol cars were all bad?
I think lots of people were encouraging us to drive diesel. And indeed, I learnt to drive in such a diesel car and passed my test in Bury St Edmunds in one.
Well, sorry, I just wanted to point out the inconsistency there. But the answer to that question is yes, of course I'll be talking to them, because I don't think it's the answer. And I think a lot of these things are actually an excuse to raise tax, and they're not actually anything to do with the green agenda at all.
But the air quality is not pretty good, is it? If you take a look at some of the records, there's about 4 or 5 units around Cambridge, and some areas, I think one particularly down on Regent Street in the centre of town. The readings there, you know, that's not good if you're an asthma sufferer, for example, or other respiratory diseases.
Well, I'd like to look at a range of solutions for that, because the biggest polluters in terms of diesel are, in fact, a lot of the public service vehicles and the HGVs that go through, rather than the small cars. But the answer is, I'm not going to jump straight into supporting a tax on diesel cars without looking at the problems and the potential other solutions that could be out there. People's health is important, but, you know, it's gone by the board for so many years. Why the sudden interest now?
And how about electric buses, which a lot of the other candidates have mentioned? Not necessarily a concept which is agreed with by the bus companies, but where do you stand on that?
Well, I think there's a bit of hypocrisy here as well, because the electric buses have to be charged, and the charging that they use through the electric power often comes from coal and gas-fired power stations, and therefore there's some burning of carbon fossil fuels there. So I think we have to be a bit careful.
We would have cleaner air in the city centre, wouldn't we?
Oh, we certainly would, but, you know, some of the other advantages that are pushed are not necessarily quite as clear-cut as they seem.
OK, we'll take a sort of a pause at this point. I'm asking all of the candidates the same set of 5 so-called quick questions. I'm using the term quite loosely here, but let's see how we go on all of these. I can probably guess your answer to the first one, but for means of consistency, I'll ask it anyway. Brexit, yes or no?
Yes.
Would have been a surprise if you went in the other direction on that. Train, car, bus or bike?
Car.
Cash or credit card, or indeed contactless?
Credit cards, if used wisely, by that I mean to postpone paying for something short term.
Housing or greenfields? What would you prefer? Would you prefer to build housing, or would you prefer to...
I'm thinking about housing on greenfields.
Well, then you can interpret it in that direction. Would that be something you approved of?
Well, the answer is housing on brownfields and leave the greenfields alone.
Yeah. come to housing in just a moment in a bit more detail. And the fun question, or as close as we're going to get to one on this programme anyway, the weekend is for, and you're allowed to fill in the answer.
Getting away from work.
Let's move on to housing then. And Cambridge, I think, has a larger chunk than some of the other areas, 70 million, I think it is, to spend. How would you spend it?
Well, there are two things. Apart from trying to get so-called affordable housing, which means many things to many different people, one of the things that I want to focus on, which was somewhat different from the other candidates, is the amount of empty housing that's standing around not being used. There are actually 600,000 houses in England which are standing empty, and local authorities have powers to actually take over those properties and get them back into use. Now, if you consider that we're building maybe 300,000 houses a year, that's half the number that are standing empty. So yes, I want to use the money that's on the table to build houses, and I'll be working with councils for them to bring forward sites at low cost so that we can put the houses up as cheaply as possible and sell them or rent them as cheaply as possible, and involving housing associations as well. But I do want to see, as part of the allocation of funds, some evidence from the constituent authorities that they're doing something about the vast number of properties that are standing empty.
And some of those properties standing empty are actually sometimes new properties. I remember my friend Johnny Vale at the Cambridge News did a piece on properties in Cambridge which had been bought as investment vehicles and were sitting and doing nothing. Now, this is the problem. You can't, if it's a private landlord, how can you force them? If they want to leave a house empty, what can you do about it?
Well, there's a number of things you can do. They could serve a compulsory purchase order on the property. Now, it's a lot of work, and you'd have to say, why would I want to do that? But they could do that. If the property is dilapidated, they could issue an improvement notice. They could apply for an empty dwelling management order, which enables them to take over the management of the property for up to 7 years. And there's a few other things as well that they can do. But at the end of the day, you want to discourage people from buying property to invest and get the property back into use. And I think that if some councils started to pick a few properties, particularly ones that have been empty for a long time, and actually make an example of them, you'd see a reversal of the trend of leaving properties empty.
You think that would encourage people, not everybody, of course, in the houses can be left empty for any one of a number of reasons, of course, but those which are where the landlord or the owner is around, do you think could be brought back into use relatively quickly?
Yes, I do. If the property is in reasonable condition, if you say it's a new one that's been left, then why can't it be rented out? The owner can still gain the appreciation from the capital value, but in the meantime, it can be used to house people.
Have you any idea of the numbers of those involved, say, in Cambridge or in Peterborough, say?
I haven't got the numbers locally. I did go looking for it, actually. I found this figure of 600,000 for the whole country. So I would take a stab at it and say we must have around at least 10,000 that are empty within the whole of Cambridgeshire.
Would you move people around? There's often the issue of people wanting to live in the village, the town, the city, both where their parents live and arguably also where they were brought up. It's very important to people. But getting people a house on the housing ladder, that's important too.
Well, I've moved geographically a few times in my life, and it's not pleasant because you've got to rebuild all your connections again. But sometimes you have to. I had to, going back to 1979, because I wanted a job and I wanted a house, and Peterborough was a new town and they were offering a deal whereby if you got a job, you get a house. So there are incentives that can be made that then override people's requirement to stay in the locality that they are. But I do understand why people want to stay in the particular areas, and we need to try and provide some help for that. There is much less need for people to drive to work nowadays. I myself work from home, and I'm connected right across the world. I've got a colleague who works in Australia, and I've got other colleagues who work in India, other colleagues who work in Peterborough and up and down the country. And so, you know, we're overcoming some of this transport difficulty and commuting difficulty by technology anyway.
Do you think we're wrong sometimes, particularly in Cambridge, but I think this could apply to Huntingdon, to St Ives, to Peterborough, of course, as well, of encouraging business in, but actually not being able to house the workers who are already working for the companies locally?
Yes, well, that's why the mayor role is a critical one, because you've got powers over housing, you've got powers over infrastructure, you've got powers over new investment in business opportunities, encourage business to the area. So you can actually put a package together, hopefully, that allows you to cover off both moving people in, moving businesses in, moving the workers in and housing them, and making sure the infrastructure is there to get them to and from the places they need to go to.
And majority, almost, I'd say, use the term in such a way, almost acting as a middleman between local, district, county councils, and potentially national government at times as well. Is that how you see it? Or
that's exactly what it is, because you've got six local authority leaders who form the mayoral authority, and yourself. So you're only one voice out of seven. But one of the key things the mayor is going to do, having with the local authorities having worked to get this mayorship and having persuaded the government to part with some money which otherwise the government would have spent, the next thing to do is to develop the concept and get more money in to be decided upon locally.
I noticed Mr. Palmer's not too keen on the county council at all. What is your feeling? He would like to perhaps remove... Slightly putting words into his mouth, but one gets the impression he'd like to remove that particular tier of local government in this area. Would you want to do something similar, or do you think the county council should stay where it is?
I've got a certain fondness for Cambridgeshire County Council. I mean, it's the very first authority I worked for when I came to Peterborough. I worked in the education department in Tootle Close in Peterborough. So I've got a certain affection for the county, and having lived under its jurisdiction for the last 5 years with Fenland Council as well, I've not found it to be too bad. I recently reported a whole batch of potholes in my road, and they were down there pretty quick fixing them. So I haven't got any firm views on trying to change the structure of local government, at least not initially. What I want to focus on really is doing as much as we can to improve residents' lives with the money that we've got and the powers that we've got.
So if you're successful on May the 4th, you'll have 4 years, I think, to get everything sorted out. If you're not successful, if you happen to come second, is it back again and away from politics, or do you feel you've got one more political challenge left in you?
I think if something new and interesting comes up, I've got another political challenge. But I have a dream that I've harboured for the past 5 or 6 years to retire to the Canary Islands. I'm not quite of retirement age yet, some people would say. But the other thing is that with my colleague working for my company from Australia, and you wouldn't know it really because he's still doing the same output, then, you know, perhaps that's possible as well. Not retirement, but a move and working somewhere else, subject to broadband.
And you never know with broadband in Cambridgeshire, do you? Mm. Stephen Goldspink, thanks very much for speaking to us.